Quelques gouttelettes au réveil, 10h l'heure de l'apéro, l'appel du...
All right, here's the deal. A few months ago, I interviewed Ryan Dahl. Then, shortly after, I took off to Europe, came back, the house that I was renting was foreclosed on, had to move, I started a startup. Basically, a whole lot of things happened all at once that delayed me from ever getting this audio out, as well as a few other interviews that I have, like with J. Chris Anderson and a few other people. So, without further delay, here's a fantastic interview with Ryan Dahl.
Pour savourer le sommeil, une petite liqueur d'abricot, je suis le petit soleil, rougeau. Réveillez-moi.
How do you feel about Knockout? This year's Knockout, I should say.
It went really well. Last year it was very tiring, and this year it was also very tiring, and it's come to mean, you know, weeks of like stressing out trying to get our service together to ready for Knockout. So yeah, I think it would be a bit more fun if I could participate. So I told Vishnu that like next year I'm not going to judge, and I'm not going to, like, you know, be putting together some PaaS service for this. I just want to, like, relax and actually use Node and not worry about bugs.
So that would be cool. I don't know if you're a, like, I don't know. We'd have to disqualify you from actually winning or something. Like, something about it seems unfair.
No.
Like, oh, this thing doesn't work. Oh, okay. I'll just, you know, change course.
I think that's acceptable. Other people could do that too.
That's true. People could run their own forks. So yeah. So how long has Node? How long have you been working on Node?
I have been working on Node since February of 2009. So 2.5 years now, I think.
Okay, 2.5 years.
Which is a while.
It's not that long.
Pretty long. It's long for me.
Yeah, I mean, but like in 2.5 years, there's been, I don't know, maybe a dozen conferences about Node. Like two Node Knockouts now. And yeah, I mean, there's like an amazing amount of excitement about it. And adoption, considering that you've been working on it for 2.5 years.
It's definitely got a lot of adoption, considering it's only 2.5 years old. But that was, it's been a long 2 years.
It doesn't feel like 2 years. I'll definitely say that.
It's been two and a half years of every single day waking up and fixing bugs, basically almost every single day.
Wow. Wow.
Every weekend, every day.
It's a, your every waking moment is
yeah. I mean, yeah. These days I treat it more as a job, but I mean, for a long time it was just like all consuming and like the only thing I did. Like, oh my god, people care about my project. I better like really make this thing work.
Now you've delegated that to other people.
now there's a lot of other people that contribute, and I don't have to worry about that. And, you know, there's several people who are paid to work on it. And so, I mean, this lessens the stress a lot. But it's still a very exciting thing to have Node be so popular.
Yeah, yeah. And so before we get into sort of like why you did Node, like how did you actually get into programming?
I got into programming, I think there's various stages in my life where I got into programming, but I had a computer at a very early age, like 6 years old, and I think my mom bought me like a book on BASIC back then for our Apple IIc, and I mean, a long time ago, I programmed stuff, but I mean, it was just dicking around. So I think it kind of depends on what it means to get into programming. I mean, if you mean really getting into programming, it wasn't until like 5 years ago.
And so was that right before or after you dropped out of college?
After. I did programming when I was in high school. I did this Napster client. I actually, like, Napster came out. I was like, oh man, it's so cool, but it was only for Windows. And so reverse engineered the protocol and wrote a version for Linux.
Okay. So you're always sort of like a lower level networking kind of guy.
No, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. It was super crappy, but
okay. You learned networking.
I was really into stealing music. So
isn't that how we all get into programming? No, I mean, like, I learned all this stuff about networking because I was trying to hack into things. And so you have to, like, look at what's going on in the network to figure out what's happening. And then so I had to figure out how networking stuff worked. And,
right. Yeah. It all stems from some deviant activity that somebody wants to do.
Mostly, you know, the interesting programmers probably. And so after you dropped out of college, you started doing Ruby at some point. Like, where were you at that time?
I was in Argentina. I mean, I did math for a long time. I was in a PhD program and kind of dropped out 3 years into it.
Why did you drop out?
I just wasn't. It wasn't doing it for me. You know, it's really fun to work with math because you just have a piece of paper and a pencil and you can sit in your office and there's no computer and you can just kind of look out the window and like look at the plant and then go get some coffee and like think about these problems. And often like we would just have these problem sets where, you know, you're in grad school and they would just give you, okay, here's your problem for the week. You know, they give you like three problems and they're like, can be stated in one sentence and answered in one sentence. And yet you would spend the entire week like trying to figure this shit out. And it's,
you didn't go Goodwill Hunting on it and just like...
Read no. I could not get into it just because nobody cares. Like, so I studied algebraic topology and it's... Nobody cares. Like, it's hard to do something and get excited about it when just nobody else cares. You're like, look, it's really hard. It's look at this thing I solved. And like, I don't understand that. B, even if I did understand it would be meaningless. And C, like,
if it took you a week to solve this one sentence problem, then there's no way that you could explain it to me in any amount of time where I would be able to understand.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's extremely technical. Math is cool, though. I mean, it's cool to sit there and think about problems. I mean, it's a nice way of spending your life sitting there with a piece of paper and a pencil and solving these problems. The problem is that nobody cares, and it's pointless to a large extent. Theoretical algebraic topology sort of stuff, I mean, it gets out there, and it's not so useful. I was well on my way to, you know, I was like on the professor track. That's like what I wanted to do. I want to be a math professor. I'm like that was my dream for like many years. But at some point I was like, wait a second, why, why would I want to do that? You know, at some point I can get paid like $60,000 a year if I like struggle for the next 10 years. Like, I don't know.
And it's just at this point, like, I mean, like, the older professors certainly didn't have as much of this, but, like, these new people becoming professors, how long do you have to work off the debt for your PhD program making $60,000?
Well, I mean, if you're – I mean, it's different for sciences. So, I mean, they pay you to go to grad school.
Right, because you're teaching class.
Yeah, so you're not incurring debt. You're just – you're breaking even, basically.
I mean, I know people in PhD programs, though, that don't allow them to work on the side, and they don't actually give them enough money to live off of. And so they're constantly struggling.
Oh yeah, I mean it depends on the subject, but and math is kind of in the middle. If you're more towards, you know, electrical engineering or mechanical engineering, like usually you get a fairly good paycheck. Math gets an okay paycheck, but if you get into like the realm of humanities and stuff, I mean, basically it's slavery.
Oh man. That's too bad. So you decided that that's just not what you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah. And so I was just like...
So you didn't know what you wanted to do, so you were like, I'm going to go to Argentina. How did you decide that?
Right, yeah. So I just was like, okay, fuck this. And I'm going to... I'm leaving everything. And I packed my car. I was living in Rochester, New York. And drove across country with my girlfriend to San Diego. Had booked a one-way flight to Chile. And did that with my like remaining $1,000.
You were a thousandaire.
Yeah, and got to Chile, and they were like, immediately stepping off the plane, they're like, oh, you're from America? Well, we have a $100 fine for like any American like entering the country. It's like, fuck. That's like, that's one tenth of my money. Like, Jesus Christ. But I don't know. Basically, I had to have a change. And so I thought like a one-way flight to Chile would invoke some change in my life. Yeah. And it did. Moved to Valparaiso and struggled finding an apartment, but eventually found some lodging with some student people. But it was like, Valparaiso is this extremely hilly city, and like, it was like on the side of a canyon that got no sun and kind of like buried down deep, and there's no heating. Oh, and like, we went in the summer and we didn't really realize that, like, oh, when you get there, it's winter. Like,
yeah.
Shit. And it's like cold. I mean, like Chile, like, what? It's like Latin America. Isn't this going to be like nice and tropical? No, it's like fucking cold. So we're like in the side of the hill in this apartment, and like, it's just cold, and there's mold, and there's no heating, and there's only one like gas tank for the entire house. So like, you could take a shower, but you'd have to take the gas tank to the shower, but then nobody could cook, so you had to take the gas tank over to cook, and like, it's very very annoying. Anyway, that's where I learned to program for reals.
Because you didn't have anything to do.
I had nothing to do. I basically sat in the bed all day long because it was really cold and we didn't have heating, just with the blanket over myself, and started to learn Ruby on Rails. I've done a lot of programming before that, and like in my schooling did mm-hmm. stuff, so I had some experience. But
right.
This was like my first time. This was the beginning of the stage of the programming that it just never stopped. Like, I got into web stuff and it went from there.
Yeah. And then, so how did you make it from there to Buenos Aires then?
Oh yeah. So, it was really cold. So we stayed in, we made a trip to Buenos Aires, which is really far away. You take a bus and like goes over the mountains and like drives across the continent, and then you arrive in Buenos Aires in like 2 days. And
a 2 day bus trip. I just can't imagine
It's very painful. And we were in Buenos Aires for a while, just kind of hanging out for like a week or something. And I was looking on Craigslist, and I met this guy, Eric, who was looking for somebody to help him with his PHP website. And I was like, okay, well, I can help with that. He turned out to be this American guy. And he had all these contracts, and he needed work. And so I started helping him with this. And so this is like how I got into becoming a professional programmer. And we moved to Buenos Aires after that because I could get work with this guy. And so we were just kind of doing website contracts.
Oh, cool. And then, so you did like some notable stuff in Ruby before you stopped doing Ruby stuff, right? I mean...
Yeah, right. So this went on for a while. And like in between, I moved to Germany. And I basically just became a contractor. I really didn't like making websites for people because this was like just so painful, like dealing like, oh no. And we worked for this snowboard company and like, oh man, we need more like skulls on the website. More skulls. Like,
when I break out the,
there's like a lot of skulls on there already, guys. Like, I don't know about this. And like, no, we need more skulls. Like, okay. And lightning bolts too. Lightning bolts and skulls. Yeah, it was. So I was like, okay, I have to get out. But this was like the only way I could make money, right? I was kind of looking for a job as a math. Like, at this point, I didn't really realize that like I would want be a programmer or something. It was just like a way to make some money on the side. Like I said, I had like zero money. So I was still kind of like looking to be a math teacher somewhere. And so kind of applying for jobs here and there. But it turned out that like this website programming stuff like was paying fine, and it was fairly easy to get jobs. And so I just started doing other stuff because I didn't like doing website stuff.
And so you started, what do you mean by other stuff?
Oh, like just for Ruby stuff that, just trying to improve the web browser, the web web framework stuff.
Like the web performance stuff?
Yeah, just better ways to make websites. I found it more interesting to work on the framework than actual websites. So I worked on Ezra from Rails. What's that? Engine Yard. He had this project called MERB, which was like this alternate Ruby on Rails framework, which in retrospect was really stupid, but I kind of found it fascinating.
More tolerable than Rails as well.
Yeah. So I worked on that for a while, and then I kind of got into this idea of like, okay, let's see if we can make this thing fast, because MERB was all about like, we're going to take Rails but cut out the shit and it's going to be really fast. But mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with that is that the framework was not the problem. It wasn't so clear yet that the problem was a little bit lower than that. And so I was just kind of working on this and you know, getting into benchmarking this thing and trying to make it serve websites faster, and eventually decided, okay, you know, well, maybe I can, so there was Mongrel at the time, maybe I can make like a faster Mongrel. And I attempted this with a project called Ebb. This didn't work out very well. It was very complicated, and I don't think it was actually very much faster than Mongrel, given how much complexity it added. So yeah, I did a couple of things in this vein, but I guess this is how I got into kind of web servers.
Right, and that pushed you down the stack more into C as well. And then I know for a little while you just wanted to have like a C stack that you could just build sites in.
Yeah, right. So,
which is kind of insane. Like, nobody builds websites in C.
Well, I had this idea that we could just build like a kind of a modular web server that was built out of various C libraries. I didn't actually expect people to make websites in C, but
okay.
But to kind of have this web server that was not just, you know, this big thing that you like installed, but rather kind of a set of libraries. And so if you wanted a really small web server that just did a very specific thing, you could just take part of those libraries and do that. And yeah, I mean, I worked on that for quite a while. But it's just not so exciting because nobody really, you know, it all comes back to like what excites people. And it's just more exciting to have something that people care about, and nobody really cares about some little C libraries. I didn't get very far. So I had a project back then, which I never released, called, well, now I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, this little web server library. But I mean, basically this same concept is what has become libuv today. It's more or less the same design, wrapping around libuv and just kind of giving it some socket support.
Very nice, very nice. And this whole time, you're now in Cologne, right? You'd moved to Cologne.
Mm.
And you were there illegally at one point, or like overstayed your visa or something.
Yeah, I mean, I just moved there like without any idea of what was there or like how long I was allowed to live there, and got an apartment and just started like living there, and like stayed there I ended up staying there for 2.5 years. But when I got there, the first time I left Germany was 9 months after I arrived, which is past, you're allowed a 6-month visa for tourists. I remember like leaving, like getting on the, I was going home for Christmas to San Diego, and I was getting on the plane and got stopped at the gate where they're like checking passports and stuff. And the control officer was like, "Hey, how long have you been in Germany?" I was like, 9 months. He's like, "What? You can't do that." And I was like, "Oh, sorry, but I'm leaving right now." And he's like, "Okay, well, don't do it again." Of course, I had like a flight back like 2 weeks later. And that was very stressful, like coming back and just like sweating and just like, "Oh fuck, like they're going to like put me in jail. Like, I've already got the, you know, what are they going to do to me? And, you know, trying to look as American as I could, you know, take off my German army jacket, not say anything German, and like go through control. And I got back in, but I promptly went to the Ausländeramt, to the immigration office, and signed up and registered. And it's actually quite easy. So people are always asking me like, hey, I'm American, and I want to go to Germany. What do you do? Do you like register on the website? Like how do you get there? And how do you become how do you get a German visa? Super easy, especially if you are like a white American, because the Germans, they're very racist, right? Like, as I think all Europeans are, but like, it was just so easy for me. You just walk in, they're like, oh, Herr Dahl, so nice to see you again. Of course, like, you know, outside the Ausländeramt, there's like a big line of like, you know, African and Asian people who are all like, you know, nervously waiting with their big piles of papers and stuff, and just walk in like, oh, you know, hey, so, you know, what can we do for you today? Well, I want to stay in Germany. They're like, okay, So, you know, do you have a reason for this? I'm like, not really. Like, okay, well, do you have a job? Like, no, not really. I mean, kind of, but now let's just say I don't have a job, right? They're like, okay, well, you can go to university. It's free. We'll give you a visa for that.
Would you like some free education,
yeah,
foreigner?
Would you like some free education? And I'm like, well, that sounds nice. I'm very thankful for that, but I've already been to university, actually, so no. They're like, oh, too bad. Okay, what can we do? Do you want to learn German? I was like, yeah. Yes, I do. I want to learn German. Great. Here's a year visa for learning German. And stuff like this, right?
Well, the trick of that is that you actually aren't allowed to make any money. Like, I mean, either for an American company or for
a
German company.
Sure. I'm sure I was violating all sorts of laws by being a contractor. Eventually I did get after, you know, my initial visa, my several tourist visas and my learning German visa, and then I eventually got like a proper work permit where I like paid taxes and stuff, which was good.
Cool.
So it's easy. Just go there, you know, unless you're black, and then they'll probably throw you in jail.
Oh God.
I have nothing against Germans, but I don't know.
Well, you do.
I do not trust their like bureaucratic people there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first time that I saw anything about Node, and I think most people saw anything about Node, was your talk at JSConf EU. And I think that, like, a lot of the organizers there, like, knew you, or at least knew of the project, because, you know, you were in Germany. And it was just kind of going around. Like, the first early contributors were mostly German and stuff like that. And then, yeah, so tell me how that talk went. Like,
oh, it was, well, I mean, I wasn't even sure. Like, I was like very excited about Node, and like I knew that it was cool. I mean, it had been released at that point, but it wasn't very. It hadn't really gotten popular, and so I prepared a lot for this talk. I mean, I'm not a public speaker in any way, and so for weeks I just like would rehearse and rehearse this talk. I mean, I'm not very articulate. I can't speak. And so, like, giving that talk was extremely nerve-wracking for me. And I remember going up, and I had my, like, crappy Linux computer, like, that one there. And
you rocked that for a long time. Yeah. Every time you'd go anywhere, I'd be like, "That it's not going to work with that trajectory."
Right, yeah.
This is like, going to be the fucking day.
I remember going up there and setting it up and like trying to plug it in, and then the screen goes black, and I was like, "Oh fuck, okay, what's the command again? xrandr-auto to like oh my god, like trying very hard to get this working." And Jan and Malta are there, and they're like, "Come on, get it ready." I'm like, "Okay, God, all right, Jan, can I use your computer?" And he like plugged it in, and he's like, "Okay, do you need anything?" I'm like, "No, I don't know, just a terminal, okay." And then he's like, okay, ready, go. And I mean, this was, I've given a lot of talks since then, and I mean, now I'm kind of used to it, but I was just like so nervous. And so I just started giving this talk, and like the entire time I'm saying to myself in my head, just like, oh, fuck, like, what am I doing? I mean, there's 300 people here. Like, I am not meant to be here right now. Like, I am just completely, I really thought I was fucking it up. And, I really was like, I'm just going to walk out right now. And just like, I will walk out of this room, like, you know, down to the train station, get on a train back to Cologne and just fuck this whole thing. Like I never have to see these people again. It just, I mean, from like the start of it, it was just so hectic with the computer and stuff. It made me so nervous. And like, I had met all these people that I was like total fanboy of, like Tom Robinson and like, you know, Chris Colwell and like all of these people. I was just like, oh my God, you know? So yeah, it was nerve wracking. But I guess it went okay. I had an IRC demo, like an IRC server, and it actually worked, which was amazing because the thing was, I had just like thrown it together and it was not clear that would work, but people like logged in. It's like, oh, thank God, live demo.
Well, I believe it got like some kind of standing ovation. Like people were pretty excited.
except that I didn't really, people told me that after. I didn't really see it. I was far too like obsessed and nervous at the time.
The mic is picking up all of that. We spilled some beer. We're cleaning it up. It's all good. I remember at the end of that talk, you were like, also, I am unemployed. So could somebody please like give me a job?
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, so I had, when I started Node, I had this idea. It was like, okay, non-blocking IO, JavaScript. That's it. That's fucking it. Like, all right. Like, it was just like an epiphany moment that like, I have to do this. Like JavaScript non-blocking IO, it fits perfectly. And so I worked on, I quit all my contracts and I worked on this for 6 months. So I was like until that talk, I had not taken a job for 6 months because since February. So it was like February to November, I had been working on this straight, like full time.
And you were living with your girlfriend at the time, right? Who, like, was she bringing in any money? Like, was Lisa bringing anything?
I mean, she was a student. She worked.
So she did some kind of German government dole, like. Yeah, that I mean, she now has to split with you because you want to write some JavaScript.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little saved up, and I was, you know, okay, but it was, you know,
towards the end,
yeah. young kid in Europe with not so much money. So yeah, I was really hoping to promote this and get some sponsorship for it in some way.
And you talk to a lot of people. Out. Yeah, yeah. You talk to a lot of people. Like, I know Jan was really excited about it. And
yeah,
was calling everybody that he knew. And...
Yeah, I was. Like, after that talk, there was a lot of interest in it. And I was talking to many different people that were interested in doing it. But, you know, it wasn't very popular, right? I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was good enough to get on Hacker News or whatever. And so people were like, somewhat interested in it, but it wasn't like, it's not like it is now, right? There wasn't anybody using it or anything. So it wasn't like clear at all that this thing would go anywhere. I mean, it was still just a demo. So a lot of the people that I talked to, they're like, yeah, sure, we'll hire you. And, you know, maybe you can work on this for your like 20% time or whatever. And it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, that would work too. I mean, I would take that, but a couple of people were interested in kind of sponsoring this full time. And Joyent was one of those people. And so I was out in San Francisco, and Mark Mayo gave me a call. He's the CTO here at Joyent, and just like, hey, we got to meet. And I was like, okay, but you know, I'm just about to get on the plane. I've got like, you know, 4 hours or something. It's like, quick, let's just meet down at the ferry building. So we impromptu met down there, and he just kind of explained to me like what they're doing and, you know, what they see going on and you know, why this would be a really good fit. And it just like clicked very well. I mean, they're very into cool new technologies and server-side JavaScript and kind of had this trajectory that seemed very exciting. And so I was like, yeah, great, let's do it. And so I moved out here to work with them.
Yeah. And that's been going great so far. I think that, like, the impression that a lot of people got was, oh, okay, now Joyent, it's a hosting company, now they're going to do node hosting, and they just want to do that. And I mean, NO.de did go up and everything, and you guys do want to be a node hosting company, but I think the primary thing you guys do with it is actually build a product, right? Like, that uses Node.
That's right, yeah.
Which is like a cloud data center operating system thing, right?
Right, yeah. It's kind of, I mean, people are always asking me, like, what does Joyent actually do? And it's not so clear from the website. I mean, it's not a product that you would really be interested in as an individual. I mean, it's like, oh, basically they target people who own data centers, like,
right.
Like telecom people. So, I mean, you know, our customers are like, you know, the telephone company in Hong Kong or something. I mean, you just wouldn't.
Hold on. That's my bad. I should have shut that off. No. Okay. All right. Continue.
So, I mean, it's kind of, it's a bit, I don't know. People just don't really know what we do. But, I mean, it's actually a very cool product. I mean, more or less, we're building kind of a shippable Amazon EC2 sort of thing, but with a lot of cool features built on different technologies.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have seen some of the screen or the video demos of like the dtrace based analytics that you guys can do in real time and all that.
Right. So it's all based on Solaris instead of Linux. And right, we recently it takes a long time to get to this stage, but I just in the last couple of months we've released some really interesting technology with like the KVM port to Solaris. And I think a lot of people were like kind of unclear of like where Joyent was going until like the KVM thing came out. Mm-hmm. And just like, oh, I get it. You don't actually expect everybody to run Solaris. You just want Solaris as like the main management operating system. Mm-hmm. And you can virtualize other OSs. And it's like, oh, okay, that actually makes sense because like, you know, operators do actually want Solaris. It's just users don't.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's coming to maturity now. It's still a very young product, but yeah, we use Node all over the place in there.
I think that's been good for Node too. That it's the people that are sponsoring it are using it rather than they're just sort of geeking out about a language.
Yeah,
like, bad things happen when you like hire the guy who runs a platform or a language or something to just sit there and geek out about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly been given my fair share of time to geek out about it, but yeah, this was the one thing that really drove me towards Joyent was that it wasn't this abstract concept. Oh, you've got this cool thing, like let's do that. It was more like, no, we need that thing to. This is it, like exactly what we need to build our product, and like we're going to put this to use, you know, in the telecom industry. In the data hosting industry, you know, we need it to solve problems, and that was kind of the sort of problems that I was addressing with Node, like little demons that sit here and there and talk to each other.
And that fits into the Node philosophy a little bit too, which is more like it's less about caring about this language feature or that language feature. It's like, no, what is the thing that is most important for you to build your application? Like let's keep the language small. Let's not dick around with all these extra things that aren't that necessary. Let's just build applications. Like, what's blocking us from actually building applications?
Right. And even more than that, it's a simple way to build network applications. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I think the goal is fairly clear. Like that's what we're going for. And so a lot of questions can be answered with that philosophy. Do we care about, you know, HTTP colon being the URL schema? No, we don't give a fuck. Like, actually, nobody gives a fuck because we don't really care. As long as we can kind of put together our servers and deal with it, nobody actually cares.
Yeah. That thread's kind of hilarious. It really sort of put all the people from Ruby and Python or people that are super into, like, a particular standard up against the more practical, like, this is JavaScript. This is what people expect. We're mimicking the kind of known.
Yeah, we're not interested in, promoting our ideals of how programming should be. We're more interested in bringing users to a place where they feel comfortable and they can being useful, right? Mm-hmm.
So. Like all of those abstractions that are, really opinionated, they can live on top of this. Like as long as we keep this simple,
yes,
those people will have a place to go. I mean, short of something like fibers, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea, is to keep it simple enough that it can be used for many different purposes.
Yeah, I mean, so whenever something gets this popular, and especially when it's on Hacker News so often, people start to get a little bitchy about it. Like, I mean, competitive and people from other.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I've always been a Vim user, and I've always said, Emacs users are assholes, which they are. But I've come to realize that, possibly if I was the person. I've just come to realize that like, you joke around with these things a lot. And I think some people take them to heart that, like, hey, man, I'm an Emacs user and I'm not an asshole. And then and somehow the joke that is tongue in cheek, like over editors, which I think everybody can agree on, like, nobody actually cares like what editor you use. It's just kind of this tongue in cheek thing. With programming languages, I also thought it was that way, but it seems that there are people who actually get upset at like other people's choice
of how
they do stuff.
I mean, I don't have any numbers to back this up, but I would imagine that Vim and Emacs are pretty well evenly split in terms of market share. And and they're pretty dominant. Like, they definitely dominate the space that they care about. Like, they're not really trying to compete with Microsoft Visual Studio. Like,
right.
They don't care. Like, they're trying to attract Unix geeks, and they're really fighting over the Unix market. The difference, I think, with seeing some of the reactions to Node, they've been mainly from people who are working in other small platforms, other platforms that are not as large as, say, Java. Like, Java people haven't, there's actually been a lot of Java people that come over that really like Node. And for the most part, they're just kind of ignoring it, because who cares, it's not enterprise yet. But yeah, most of the kind of attacking have been from really new platforms, predominantly. People from Scala or Clojure, some of the more fringe, like Python, Twisted, and the Greenlit stuff. Which is kind of interesting. It's like,
well, I mean, they all kind of address the same problem space, and they think their solution is better than our solution. And I guess it comes to that. I mean, at some point, I mean, people become kind of emotionally invested in these things because they have a job where they are the Scala expert or whatever, and they really don't want to have to learn some new framework, or it's superior in this capacity, and so they're going to really fight. I don't know, you, whatever. I mean, I don't really care that much. I mean, I make Node. It's got problems too, and I hope that I can address those problems and solve all those problems for people. But I mean, for me, it's not a religious thing. It's just, this is the project that I'm making.
Well, and keeping that in mind, this is just this is the project you work on. This is the one that you came up with. You spend all day fixing things that are wrong with it, right? Why do you think that people are so excited about it?
I would like to think that it's because of my superior server technology.
I really doubt it.
Yeah, that is what I tell myself at night. But what is actually the reason people use it is because it's JavaScript and it makes them feel safe and at home. And it's JavaScript the way the browser intended, single-threaded and with a lot of callbacks and that sort of stuff. And it makes people feel comfortable, and they can come to it and they can throw together stuff easily, and they don't have to context switch between what they're doing on the website and on the front end. And yeah, it feels good.
I think some of the concurrency stuff too, it's really opened up new possibilities. And so even when Node is broken, it's so much better at doing a couple things that you have this whole new world of things that you can think about building. I think people get really excited about that. And it makes them really ignore or sometimes like consciously try to disprove like huge problems that we still have. That we're
yeah, when you go from one concurrent user to 100 concurrent users, like when your technology changes and you get that shift, that's a big shift, actually. like it's not just, you know, 10, 100 times better. It's like, whoa, holy shit, like 100 concurrent users now. Like that actually, that really changes what I can do with this thing. Because with one concurrent user, I can basically just serve pages to people and like have them fill out forms and and they can't really interact. But, you know, with actually different people on the server, now I can make a game. Now I can like, you know, start pushing data at them. I can do all these sort of interesting tricks. So yeah, it changes the game when you go from Ruby on Rails to Node, mm-hmm. certainly. And it changes the game if you go from a very heavy framework JBoss system where everything's, you know, completely defined and you're working through many layers of abstractions and you're just like sitting in XML files to something that is relatively very small and, you know, takes 30 milliseconds to start up instead of 5 seconds. And like, you know, this also just kind of changes your mindset about, oh wow, I can actually do something different than this.
So where's it going? I mean, it's a rocket ship, right? Like it's definitely growing, in popularity, and you know, there's a new version that's going to support Windows, and that's going to lead to what we expect to be a pretty big explosion in users as well. Where is it in like 5 years?
Unclear yet. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of problems that we have to deal with, that other systems address that we do not. And, you know, some of these problems we'll never be able to address, right? I mean, there are things like Erlang's processes that are really nice, right? You can put every connection in its own address space and you can kill them off very cleanly and stuff. And it's kind of unclear if we can, that's definitely like a desirable thing for a networking setup. The ability to kind of sanction off users into their own space. And I think there's that vector, which I would say is kind of going in the micro direction, you know, kind of having this micro blocks to deal with these different connections. And then in the other direction, in kind of the macro direction, is how do you deal with multiple threads on the system? So Node's a single-threaded system, so it'll only be scheduled to a single CPU. But obviously, we live on systems with multiple CPUs on them these days. So how does Node address these problems? I mean, currently we have this way of sharing a file, a server file descriptor across multiple processes that allows you to kind of load balance across multiple nodes. But it requires, you know, you have to install the cluster module or something. Probably we will be taking that into core and dealing with that problem ourselves rather than delegating it to user space. So that's kind of the more macro direction. And how to do that well? How do you do that well on Windows and on Unix? Windows really wants you to use Threads.
Yeah. I was just going to say we're going to end up using Threads. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, V8 just recently added the V8 isolates, which is allows you to have multiple VMs inside of a single process. So it's not unlikely that we'll go in the direction of taking advantage of those V8 isolates and actually running. So when you fork your node process, you'll actually get a new thread instead of a new process, and it will be in a V8 isolate. That said, I mean, people always ask me, "Oh, don't like isolates like solve everything? Isn't this basically like the Erlang processes? And you know, they can be scheduled to whatever core?" No, they're very expensive, right? It's 30 millisecond startup time. It's 15 megabytes of memory or something for each one of them. They're full threads, right? They're full OS threads, a full VM. There's no shared memory between the various isolates. So those are very much macro objects. You want to have hundreds, thousands of connections associated with each isolate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I think there's these two directions to handling connections. First of all, on the micro side, how do we kind of isolate these connections and deal with them on an individual basis and not just kind of have it be this soup of all these different connections? And then on the other side is how do we load balance across a bunch of CPUs? And can we come up with a nice API that makes this very easy for users to do? I think people are unhappy with the cluster thing. People don't like installing modules, and this is a fairly core sort of thing to solve. We are supposed to, as our motto dictates, make networking easy. And part of making networking easy would be to allow people to use to load balance over multiple threads easily. Mm-hmm. So this is probably the directions that we'll be going in once the Windows stuff is complete.
Well, last time I talked to you, you said that the next release will just be about debugging. We're just going to focus
on that. So that's that's also a problem. I mean, debugging. So V8 has this really nice debugger built in, and it seems like there's other people who are doing debugging systems like Danny Kotes, who made the Node Inspector. I mean, you can kind of do debugging, but there's this desire to have it be really good, right? I mean, my boss is the creator of DTrace, and to him, you know, having a repeatable bug is nothing, right? Like, we should be able to solve bugs that only happen once in time, and all we have is a dump of the heap from after the bug occurred and the system crashed, and we should be able to look through that thing and figure out what's going on and see, you know, be able to inspect it. So postmortem debugging is something that we're very interested in and will attempt to address at some point. It's just very difficult dealing with V8 because it's such a complicated piece of machinery. And I mean, it's not easy to modify it in the ways that we need. But yeah, I mean, that will be a focus at some point because
once we fix this, we're going to be able to iterate faster.
Oh, like, yeah,
I think that
definitely.
Everything that we've talked about in the future is going to go a lot better if at first we figure out a better way to debug.
Right.
And better hooks for debugging and like better hooks in the event system to figure out what's going on. And stuff.
Yeah, so I mean, first things first is a very better command line debugger is something that I need desperately just to step through JavaScript. The one that's in there right now is just not up to par. And then we'll see if we can get some sort of dump of the heap, which we could open up, you know, a core dump that we could open up and look at stuff. Probably we'll be promoting some of the internal objects to user visible things that will help people understand what's going on. For example, the libev watcher objects are basically what everything in Node sits on top of is these objects. And currently they're not visible for users in JavaScript land. It's just this abstraction that's under the table. But I think exposing that and making it clear, oh, you've got 10 watchers open. Now you've got 9. You know, like being able to look at that sort of information is going to help people. And tying into this, I talked earlier about this kind of micro direction of how do you kind of sanction off groups of connections into kind of a domain. This kind of plays into the debugger as well. How do you tell that a timer that somebody set in a request callback is associated with the connection? And, you know, how do you see that in the debugger and stuff? And so I think this is somewhat on the same page. It's kind of making it more clear to the user what's going on.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Good. It's going to make my life a lot easier. Well, yeah, I think that we're just about done. Any parting words you want to say or anything you want to leave with?
No. Sorry.
All right, let's go drink more.
Okay. Quelques boulettes au réveil, 11h l'heure du petit bédo, l'appel de mon Marocco. Pour retrouver le sommeil, de feuilles qui montent à l'héro, pays des merveilles, chaos. Réveillez-moi, je suis seul au monde et j'ai froid. Sortez-moi de là, secouez-moi. Quelques gaufrettes au réveil, midi l'heure des petits gâteaux, l'appel pâtissier rouleau. Pour digérer le sommeil, léger millefeuille au sirop, profiterons le miel tout chaud. Réveillez-moi, je suis seul au monde et j'ai froid. Sortez-moi de là, secouez-moi. Et moi.